This is the Web Strategies Podcast, a program dedicated to the technology and techniques of marketing your business on the internet.
Here we go, the Web Strategies Podcast. This is show number two. You have a website, now what? Well, this being show number two, it's 1 week later. The first show has been downloaded 72 times the first week. I have to say, I'm just astounded, and I'm very grateful. Thank you for your interest. We had a lot of positive feedback from the first podcast when our guest was Tom Walker, president of WebTex. We brought Tom back for this show and hope to feature him often. Tom Walker is a very smart guy when it comes to understanding business and the role of technology. And of course, it's no coincidence that WebTex is our sponsor. They understand the world of the strategic web just about as well as any company I've ever seen, and so that really goes well with this podcast. Thanks again, and by the way, at the end of the program, we'll have the Web Strategies Podcast Extra, and today it's going to be on Web 2.0. We're going to be talking about a website called Delicious. I hope you hear it. It's kind of a, if you haven't heard about Delicious, you're going to really be interested, and if you have, you're going to go, okay, well, what took you so long to figure it out, Tom? All right, so with that, in just a moment, after this little reminder about our show sponsor, we're going to start our Web Strategies Podcast number two. Thanks again.
The Web Strategies Podcast is sponsored by WebTex, the consulting and e-business solutions firm with a unique combination of strategic thinking, creativity, and technological expertise. WebTex designs and builds powerful and meaningful internet solutions. On the web at www.webtex.com.
My, how the time flies. We're already at the second episode of the Web Strategies Podcast. Hi, I'm Tom Anthony, and with me in the studio once again is the president of WebTex, Tom Walker. And Tom, thanks so much again for taking the time out of your day and visiting with us in the studio.
Thanks for having me back.
So last time out, we talked about the difference between a key performance indicator and return on investment. And it was a discussion that centered more on the fact that the website itself isn't necessarily something that's going to sell widgets. It could be something that is processed internally. And it led me to a thought that I wanted to talk to you about today about how do you go about doing this? I mean, here I am, I'm trying to imagine myself as a business owner listening to this podcast and thinking what my next move would be. How am I going to improve my business by leveraging this new technology? And I think that in talking to you about it before the show today, that you really nailed it when you said, well, who's going to be making the decisions? And so I just want to kind of turn it over to you now and say, all right, so I'm a business owner, and I'm getting ready to do a new project, and that's going to be to enhance my website. What happens next for me? What should I do?
Well, I'd like to back up and say that the initiative or the question about how do we start doesn't just apply to business owners. It could apply to executives. It could apply to anyone who's in a high-level position where they've got to direct something that's associated with the web. But the question is a great question, and it's one of the first mistakes that's usually made, and that's, okay, we want to enhance our web, or we want a better website, or we want the web to do more for us. And then ultimately the first issue that happens or the first decision that's made is who's in charge. So they turn around and they point to somebody within the organization. And unfortunately, the decision about regarding who should be in charge of this initiative is rarely made or based on the right reasons. It's either the marketing person because it's the web, so it's obviously marketing, or it's going to be the IT guy because, you know, it's web stuff and he's the only one that knows anything about the web stuff in our organization. But unfortunately, when you're starting to make and develop a strategy around the web and how the web is going to be leveraged and utilized to improve your business functions, the people who need to be driving that process are the people who are engaged in those functions and the people who are going to be impacted most by those functions. And generally what we find is that's the operations guys, or in some cases it's the finance guys. But ultimately, because it's going to have a customer-facing front and brand is important and preserving and maintaining brand, the marketing person should be involved. It is, at the end of the day, most likely going to have some interfaces with your IT and your infrastructure, so the IT guy should be involved. But what you hopefully start to hear here is it should be a team of people. Assigning one person who has a very narrow scope of focus and a very narrow scope of knowledge is a mistake, because what you're going to end up getting at the end of the day is something that works for them. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for everyone else in the organization. Answer the question, if I'm that executive or I'm that business owner, what I want to do is I want to put together a team of people who have, stakeholders, people who have a very vested interest in this overall project being successful, and I would develop a tiger team or a strategy team and say, you are the guys that are going to go out and find the team that's going to perform this initiative for us.
I think that we're completely on the same page here. I think that that's how I would approach it myself. I wanted to draw you out and talk about what happens then. Now, you get a team together, and how far do you go before you think you're ready to start talking to a technology or a web development company?
Well, the biggest problem that most people have is they call the web development team or the e-business team or the web design team or whatever we want to call it before they're ready. And they bring these teams in and they say, okay, we want to do something with the web. And then the web team, unfortunately, unless they're e-business consultants, unless they're trained on how to ask the questions to drive the team to the appropriate conclusions, they start selling what they know how to do. They start selling what, you know, is the latest in web technologies or what's the coolest gizmo on the internet. And it gets the team excited, and that's the direction they end up going. That doesn't necessarily mean that was the direction they should have gone. So either they need to do one of two things internally. The team, this internal team that's been put together, either needs to be able to discuss, and I don't want to go back and beat KPIs up, but they need to be able to start to define what are some things we want to accomplish. You know, what are some operations things we would like to accomplish? What are some finance things we may want to accomplish? How is this, what IT constraints are we going to be operating under? Just as some general guidelines. And then bring in a team and say, can you discuss these things intelligently with us? Don't tell us about the latest gizmos. Don't tell us about the latest technology. But can you discuss these needs with us in terms of how these things could be eased on the web? And if they can't, then you go and find a team who can. But what you're really looking for is somebody that can discuss those, but who's going to turn around now and start to ask that team questions that's going to start to drive them towards a common understanding of what's best for the organization.
So now your team, still in the shoes of the executive or the business owner, and I've put together the team, and they've got a series of good questions now, and they've got a series of realistic or what they feel like are realistic goals. Do you think it's appropriate at that time to start doing a wish list, things that you don't think are really possible now, but someday?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that, as long as the team's not going to get wrapped around the axle on the wish list and they're going to start making decisions based on those, you know, low-level items on the wish list. I think that's a good, I mean, what has to happen here, and it cannot be overstated, is what has to begin to evolve is the team, whether they do it themselves or whether they do it with the assistance of a talented e-business firm, is they have to begin thinking beyond what their limited understanding of the internet is and what their limited understanding of current technology is. That can sometimes start to happen internal, but what you really want is you want a team. The reason the team is important, again, from my position as the president of an e-business firm, is when we're brought in, I hope the team has already developed at least a common goal. We want to accomplish something beyond just building a brochure website. We want to really, we've recognized that there's some opportunities on the web that may be able to ease our business processes. And even if we haven't recognized it, we're at least opening to having some candid discussions about it with somebody who can draw that out of us. And so if we're going to do that, let's at least have all the appropriate people in the room who can ask those questions. How far they go is not a problem, as long as they don't go so far as to where they say, okay, we understand everything, let's develop an RFP, and we're on our way. I mean, at some point, they need to bring in somebody who can ask the right questions.
You brought up another thing that I wanted to talk about, and that's an RFP, a request for proposal, which is, as a company that services businesses and government agencies, and, you know, it's not just, retail outlets that have been utilizing the internet to conduct business. A lot of times, especially in a larger entity, they'll put out a document, sometimes a pretty lengthy document, a request for proposal, in which they very clearly have a specific, not even so much of a goal as a requirement of, we want it to be built in PHP, we want it to have 15 pages, we want to be able to manage the content. How do you feel about doing something like that, doing a request for proposal document in the average medium to large size company?
Well, I think the request for proposal process is okay only if we are going to go out and we're going to set some very generic kind of general requirements, and we've worked with somebody, we kind of know what we want to accomplish. We don't necessarily want the specific items that are in the RFP, but what we're really looking for is somebody that has the wherewithal to respond to this. And we've got the talent, and at least we can bring them in then and engage them to say, okay, these are the things we've kind of outlined based on our limited knowledge, but we really want to do much more than that. The problem, though, with the RFP is companies like ours we start from the beginning in developing the strategies. We work with the customers in analyzing their business to develop requirements. If they already have those requirements, then we feel like we may not always be the most appropriate firm for them, because really we don't know what went into those requirement specifications. We don't know if it's necessarily the right things that they're asking for, and if they're kind of fixed on those set of requirements, then we may or may not respond. So, you know, the negative to that type of detailed RFP is your more talented e-business strategy groups, who you really want, are going to be less likely to respond, and you're going to get technicians responding, not consultants and strategists responding.
You know, I'm hearing you describe some of the ups and downs of the process of issuing a request for proposal, and it was interesting the way you described that if you put out these requirements, you won't have the benefit of having somebody who knows the field give you some meaningful suggestions, which leads me to the question of, is it sometimes a waste of time even to create a request for proposal document?
Well, again, it goes back to what you're really looking for. If you're in the market for technicians who can read a set of specifications and build to those specifications and deliver to you a product that you very specifically have defined, then it's not negative at all. But that's making the assumption that your team was truly vetted out and had the e-business knowledge and developed those set of specifications based on a very broad understanding of technology, a very broad understanding of the business, and a very broad understanding of what's out there as far as capabilities. If, on the other hand, these were just a kind of a generic set of specifications and you were really looking for a strategy group to help you come in and further develop those into a larger strategy, then yes, you've done yourself a disservice, because again, as I said before, you know, strategy groups tend to shy away from those type of detailed RFPs.
You know, and another thing that comes to mind in talking to you about this is in those occasions, and there's been a few of them where the company has the technology person be the point person for the project. And because the point person for the project is well knowledged, and because the point person for the project is technology oriented, they may not see the marketing or process value of a way to move forward. Have you felt like you've run across, and can you give us an example of where having the IT person lead the group has been a detriment to the process?
Well, let me caveat this by saying I love IT guys. I have a whole lot of them that work for me, and they're all great. And so what I'm about to say is not negative, is not meant to be negative towards IT guys. But IT guys are very process oriented. That's their job. Their job is to maintain systems, typically in accordance with policies and procedures, and to ensure the integrity of networks and the operating systems that the business relies on a daily basis. And most of them that I've met do that very, very well. But when it comes to making business decisions based on KPI and strategy, based on return on investment, an understanding of the CEO's vision for the company and what's necessary to do that outside of just the IT world, they tend to not necessarily even want to go into that. They'll say, yeah, I understand the company wants to be a Fortune 500, but that doesn't necessarily mean they understand the CEO's 12 initiatives to get it to be a Fortune 500 company. So having that IT person be the lead on an e-business strategy is never a positive thing. Now, I'm not going to give you any specific examples because I have clients that I love dearly and wouldn't want any of them to come and discuss that with me. But I can tell you that I think the IT person should be a key man, and I think he's a very important person. I think it's critical that the IT person be involved, whether or not he or she is the lead, you know, is a decision that the team will have to make. But I think that all the major decisions should go through the IT person, because at the end of the day, anything we build is going to interface with those systems, and it has to work, and we have to have the cooperation of the IT team and whomever owns that infrastructure.
You know, I'm listening to that answer, Tom, and I'm just imagining out there that there's a company that, well, let's say they don't have a full-time IT person. They have a company that comes in and maintains their network. Say they have, 25 to 75 employees, workstations. And you're talking about strategy and bringing in a team. Is there a threshold size company or a dollar amount, say, that you think that the audience should be cognizant of, so that they're thinking they should go in one way or another?
I don't know that I would necessarily be able to put a dollar value on, you know, a minimum threshold, but what I can say really is the deciding factor is what are the stakeholders' commitments to the initiatives. We've had very large customers, very large clients. I have a client that's a $3 to almost $4 billion a year company, but the stakeholders are not committed to the e-business initiatives. They've been doing business the same way for a very, very long time. Everything that we discuss with them it's just a little too futuristic, to use their words, and we're talking about modern day technologies. But then we have smaller companies that are in the $10 million range, companies that are very, very committed to e-business. They understand that in order for them to be leaders in their industry, they're going to have to develop strategies. They're going to have to commit to them, and I mean commit to them in terms of energy, commit to them in terms of financial investment. So it really comes down to that type of commitment. You cannot test the waters in e-business. And that's an important fact, is that if you are going to develop an effective e-business strategy, it's going to require an investment of time, it's going to require an investment of money, and it's going to require patience, because e-business doesn't happen overnight.
That's a great answer, and it reminds me of a circumstance that I know about. A client that had a plan or has a plan, and without revealing too much about it, to have a certain kind of website that bought and sold things, kind of like a classified thing, but geared toward a certain demographic group that wanted to know, had a business plan, wanted to know what it was going to cost to launch this thing. And you're talking about commitment. After the client found out it was going to cost X dollars, they said, well, can we pare that back? Can we just kind of test the concept so I can kind of prove that it'll work or not work? And the answer was no, because if you scale back so far that it is going to not function as the original plan called for, then it's something else. Have you run into, and what we're talking about is commitment, have you run into situations where your client is just not ready to make that kind of leap?
Absolutely, and I'm familiar with the client that you're talking about, and that was a situation where we, as the potential vendor, actually told them that we wouldn't take the project because we didn't feel like they were committed to it enough for it to be successful, and that the project was going to be doomed, not because it wasn't a good product, and certainly not because we couldn't develop a good strategy around it, but there just didn't seem to be that commitment there. I've seen that in a variety of different environments, for a variety of different types of deployments, not just a website, not just a web application, but I've seen it for legacy data system integration in-house, where the operations folks really needed it and the finance folks really needed it, but the IT guys just weren't committed to it, and we just knew the project was not going to be successful and we've had to walk away. So yes, I've seen it many times.
Now, I guess what we're saying here is that in terms of wanting to be in a place where you would have an e-strategy, with wanting to go to the next level and use the internet the way that it has the potential to be used, you just got to be prepared to go all the way.
You do, but and this is where I would encourage anyone who is considering developing, deploying, and maintaining a strong e-business strategy to bring in a strong consultant. And what I mean by strong consultant is somebody who's willing to express themselves, who will tell you what you need to hear, whether you want to hear it or not, because there's two sides of that. There is the, we're going to develop an e-business strategy, we're going to be committed to the e-business strategy. And then there is the stay the course people who are not willing to modify the strategy. The whole purpose of our previous conversation about KPIs is understanding of these e-business strategies are living strategies, and they change. What's happening in the in the world of our competitors? What's happening online? What's happening in the economy? What's happening with the talent pool? What's happening with our product? There's all kind of things can change, and so our e-business strategy needs to be flexible enough to change. And you also have to be willing to say at some point, maybe this isn't the right e-business. Maybe this particular strategy or this particular component of a strategy isn't appropriate for us. So I don't want to sound like I'm being a politician and talking about both sides of my mouth, but you do need to be committed, but you also need to be flexible based on what the KPIs are telling you. And you have to be willing to pull the plug. And if you have to pull the plug on a particular component of an e-business strategy or an e-business strategy as a whole and start over, it doesn't mean e-business is wrong. It just means that strategy didn't work. And unfortunately, in business, there are no, you know, GPSs that tell us a straight line between failure and success. We have to find that way on our own.
I think that we're going to wrap up this this part of our this episode of the Web Strategies podcast. So I guess that where I want to take that question is I want to point out that you said you have to be flexible in your e-business strategy, and that kind of implies that it's an ongoing thing. And what I've seen fail pretty much the most frequently is a company that'll create a grand plan, execute the first part of it, which they feel is the whole thing, and then nothing ever happens again. You go back to the website and the latest news is from 2004. When you say you have to be committed to this e-business strategy, what does that really mean in terms of a weekly, a daily, a monthly involvement with the way that the business is using technology?
Well, for example, when we work with organizations to develop e-business strategies, there are usually 12, 13, 14 phases to what we're going to do. Phase one is we're going to develop a usability review of all of the different technologies that you're using today, what role those will play over the next several months or several years, new technologies that we plan to inject into the organization, the different stakeholders' needs that are going to be addressed over a 6, 12, 18-month period. If it involves a customer-facing interface or a sales and marketing component, how are we going to develop a sales and marketing strategy to drive traffic to that afterwards? And then how are we going to improve these particular components over the next 12 to 18 months, a continual reinvestment, if you will, into it as if it were any other business unit. Where we see failure like you is we kind of launch the first phase and everybody says, well, we want to stop right here and let's make sure this works before we move to phase 2, 3, 4, and 5. The problem is the project is phases 1 through 5 or 1 through 10. It's not phase 1. And phase 2, 3, 4, and 5 are often the critical long poles in the tent, if you will, to the overall success of the project. And we never make it to those because the first one didn't have a dramatic change in the organization that they were unrealistically expecting.
So to bring our conversation full circle, you know, at the beginning of this podcast, we were talking about the planning stage where a business executive or owner would call together a team and start thinking through what it is that they wanted to accomplish so that they could, at least have a game plan of moving forward. And now here we are nearing the end of our conversation and you're talking about, but, you know, the plan could be multi-part. You need to give it a chance. And doesn't that really say that when you have that first meeting, be realistic and go all the way through to from A to Z to be able to plan out a length of time that you're going to give the project a commitment internally, not just budget, but a buy-in from all the stakeholders?
Absolutely. And I think the way that happens, I think there's two things that you could say right here. One is that first meeting is where the senior leadership, whether it's a business owner, whether it's the CEO, whether it's a COO, whomever is kind of leading this effort, this is where they need to define their commitment to it. I mean, and I've gone into these meetings where the CEO's called it together and then leaves 10 minutes into the meeting and kind of leaves everybody sitting there. And everyone at the table, including myself, has questioned, well, who's actually committed to this? Have we now been challenged to be committed to it, or is the CEO committed to it? Is he or she just here because we're here? But the other point is, to make is if everyone in the room, everyone on your team is not committed, if you've got somebody on your team that's, well, I'm going to sit back and wait and see, then my recommendation would be, quite candidly, get that person off the team early, because those are the people that we tend to have the most challenging moments with throughout an e-business execution.
Tom Walker is the president of WebTex. Tom, I want to thank you again for taking time out of your day and joining us on the Web Strategies Podcast.
Thank you very much.
All right, here we go with the Web Strategies Podcast, show number 2. It's the podcast extra, and it's about what is called Web 2.0, which is actually a phrase that's attributed to O'Reilly Media, and it refers to a perceived second generation of web-based services. What it really means, though, it's a second generation type of website, like social networking sites. What is a social networking site? Wikis, like Wikipedia, and the one that I'm going to be talking about today, which is called Delicious, and that is a social bookmarking site. So if all this is geek speak to you, I invite you to go to the Web Strategies Podcast website where we have our show notes, and you'll have links to Delicious, and it'll hopefully be a little bit more clear to you. But anyway, about Delicious, that website's really a little funky. It's really, follow me on this one. It's really ICIO.us instead of .com, ICIO.us. And instead of the www in front, it's DEL. So it spells out a word. It's kind of clever, really. It spells out the word delicious. The web address is really DEL.ICIO.us. Anyway, Delicious is a social bookmarking site. So in other words, when you see a web page that you like, You bookmark it on Delicious, and then you can share it with your friends. Or actually, for me, it's just easier to organize because I have a lot of bookmarks. It's easier to organize that way. Or all of the users of Delicious can see that a particular web page is really popular with their users, which is also an interesting thing to know. So the link on our podcast website at webstrategiespodcast.com, I've posted the link to my personal Delicious area, but it's under a subcategory, which is really called a tag. The subcategory is Web 2.0. And the main concept you need to understand about Delicious and a lot of other Web 2.0 sites is the tag, which is a single word description of what the content relates to. It's sort of like a keyword. Anyway, if you take a few minutes to visit my Delicious page, you'll see tags relating to marketing, technology, podcasting, among others. After tracking 186 bookmarked web pages, I found myself giving a link out to a particular tag, and then all of a sudden it happened. I figured it out because the particular link that I gave out, which is similar to the one you'll see on our webcast, had all of the websites that I had gone to that had that particular topic to it that were bookmarked in Delicious. It just made a lot of sense. If you go there, I think that you'll find that it's useful. I hope that you do. And if you have any questions about Delicious or social bookmarking or Web 2.0, certainly hope that you will email us and go to the show website, put in comments. It's the webstrategiespodcast.com. And also, please, 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 go to iTunes and offer a review of our show. You have to log in. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't need to buy anything, but you have to have an account. So get a free account on iTunes, log in, go to our Web Strategies Podcast link. Just look it up. We're coming up a lot higher than I thought we would after the first week. But look it up, and then you'll see write a review about this podcast, and then we encourage you to do that, because the more reviews that are posted, the higher we'll rank in iTunes and the better it'll be for our show. So thanks again for listening to the Web Strategies Podcast. Till next time, I'm Tom Anthony.